This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
All right, we have not talked to this man in a while, and we love having him on. He is the great Buster Only, our baseball expert at ESPN. Buster, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Good to talk with you again.
Good to have you on. So what do you make of this quote-unquote standoff between the Mets and Lindor? I kind of wonder if it's a union-driven thing, because that's a lot of money to turn down.
And keep in mind, you guys probably mentioned Lindor is on the union's executive committee. And so you're right, that's a possibility. I asked a bunch of other agents over the last 24 hours the question of could he walk away from a $325 million offer, and every single one said you can't. You have to finish it at that point. Now, you know, David Meter, his agent, maybe he gets a little bit more concessions. Maybe he gets over the $335 that Bryce Harper got. Maybe he finds a way through deferrals, through bonus, to get over $340, which is what Tatis got. You know, if you want to set some sort of a benchmark. But in their eyes, you've got to get it done because there's so much risk. And think about, you know, what he has in this moment. He is the only Lamborghini on the lot that the Mets are talking to because, you know, we're not in a free agent period. They traded for him. He clearly had the leverage going into this negotiation. He's got an owner in Steve Cohen. While he might not be the wild and crazy George Steinbrenner of the mid-'80s, he is willing to spend a lot of money right now. And it's in New York. So there are a lot of boxes checked in terms of what Lindor's leverage could be, and you better take advantage of that. And you also better remember, while Steve Cohen, you know, he's increased the Mets' payroll by something in the range of 25%, he also has demonstrated he will walk away from bloated, you know, opportunities, whether, you know, George Springer, he didn't want to pay that. He didn't want to pay JT Realmuto. He's willing to pay. But if he pushes, he can't rule out the fact that Steve Cohen could walk away from one of the biggest contracts ever.
How does it look, Buster? What's the prevailing opinion of him going to social media with these negotiations?
Surprise, and there's no question that the agents feel like that he's trying to put pressure on the player. He's trying to put pressure on the agent. And maybe that's Steve with his finger in the air reading the tea leaves that people around the sport are like, you know, Lindor's got to finish this. Lindor's got to get this done. And, you know, one of the factors, of course, being the fact that in the fall, as they say, right now he's the one Lamborghini on the lot that Steve Cohen's looking at. In the fall, Corey Seager, a free agent. Trevor Story, who's an outstanding player, is going to be a free agent. Javier Baez, Carlos Correa, even though there's just been a report in the last couple hours that the Astros are re-engaged with Correa. And so I think that is definitely the read in the industry that he's trying to put pressure on Francisco through social media.
I mean, there's a part of me, Buster, I don't know if you feel like this, that this is all theater. I think it's done. What? For him to have said, "I'm going to crowdsource the fans. What should you know? What should Lindor get?" At that point, I say, "Well, he's signed. He can't be trolling the fans like that." And then letting it get out that they had dinner together. I think this deal is a done deal. I really do. I think this is all an act, and it's going to be announced either before the game on Thursday or sometime tomorrow.
I believe that a deal is going to get done. I also was told by numerous sources this morning that there is a gap, and that they have to overcome it. Now, maybe they have an understanding. You know, you right. And I both know. I remember, for example, when the Yankees traded for Chuck Knobloch, when they traded for Roger Clemens, there had already been off-the-record negotiations on extensions, and those were worked out, and they had to go through the, you know, the machinations of making it look good for the public. I guess there's the possibility of that. What I was told this morning was that there is a gap, and that, you know, the Mets are kind of digging in their heels a little bit, you know, not being interested in going to the numbers that Lindor's side is talking about, the 385.
But doesn't it make the Mets look bad because they've let it get out that this is their best and final offer if he comes off of 10 years, 325, and gives them more?
No, I don't think anyone's going to care. I mean, let's say, for example, if it's increased by $5 million, if it's increased by $10 million,
right.
Yeah, then I don't think that'll make a difference. If it's increased to 385, yes, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think the Mets are kind of drawn a line in the sand and, you know, where the number is. I mean, remember, Lindor is going to be 28 next week. He turns 28 in the fall. He's not going to be, you know, the young Fernando Tatis Jr. I'm fascinated by it, that's for sure. It's an interesting decision for one of the, you know, probably 10 best position players in baseball.
As you mentioned, there is a budget. He didn't go all the way on Bauer, didn't go all the way on Springer. How do these negotiations and eventually giving Lindor the money affect Syndergaard and Conforto?
I've been skeptical all along that Conforto might sign because he's represented by Scott Boras. And we've seen examples where Boras clients sign, but that's because the player steps in and basically gets the deal done. I have not gotten a sense that that's a possibility. There's no doubt that they, you know, the Mets' priority now, because Lindor's the biggest ticket item that they have talking with, they want to figure out what those final numbers will be before they make an assessment on what to offer Conforto. The Mets people have told me that they don't feel like there's necessarily a deadline in place. But you guys know the history of Boras clients when they get to their walk year. They walk most of the time. And I think, especially in the case of Conforto, because he had a phenomenal year last year, it's easy to believe in his future, but he's only going to benefit if he has another strong year to back it up and to go back out in the marketplace.
All right, I know we're up against the clock, so let me just ask you, what's the biggest story you think coming out of spring training? What are you most intrigued by?
Shohei Ohtani. You know, finally, we might have an opportunity to see, you know, the Babe Ruth of baseball. He has looked phenomenal overall. He's put on 15 pounds of muscle. He looks unbelievable as a hitter. I didn't check the numbers after last night's game, but going into last night's game, .571 average, 5 home runs, and 3 strikeouts for a spring. He struggled with his command pitching, but there's a lot of confidence that he's going to be able to figure it out. I talked to Mike Trout 2 weeks ago and asked him, what's a fully healthy Shohei Ohtani capable of? He said 10-plus wins as a pitcher, 30-plus home runs as a hitter. And I love the idea that in that first game that he's going to pitch for the Angels this year on Sunday night, they're going to forego the DH in all likelihood, and he's going to be the second hitter in the game. That's pretty cool.
Now, what's their plan? So he'll pitch, and then he's going to play every other day? Or is he going to pitch and take a day off and then play every other day?
Billy Epler, I thought, did a great job, you know, getting Ohtani to the Angels, and they essentially put bubble wrap on him in terms of protecting him. This spring, the Angels have basically taken off the bubble wrap, and they're just going to – they're going on a daily basis of, how do you feel today? What do you think you can do? Joe Madden described it to reporters yesterday that they asked him, you know, going into the game on Sunday, you know, what do you think? You're scheduled to pitch on Monday. He said, I'll tell you what, I'll take Sunday off. I'm not in the lineup, but on Monday I want to be in the lineup and I want to pitch. And those are the conversations they're going to rely on. No more throwing by himself or working out by himself. They're basically going to tell him, do your pitching work to prepare. And then after that, go do your hitting work if you feel like it. If you don't, then go ahead and take that time off.
Isn't it a risk, though, to have a pitcher pitch and forego the DH? Because you can't get the DH when he comes out of the game. He's out of the game then, and you have to keep sending up pinch hitters when benches have maybe 3 or 4 players.
100%. There's no doubt about that. But you know Joe Madden. He likes outside-of-the-box stuff. And I think, you know, he's sort of in an assessment mode. I think at the beginning of the year he's open to it because he says that's what Ohtani prefers, that he can hit on the day that he pitches. And if it works out and Ohtani pitches deep into the game and the sacrifice of the DH is not a big factor, I think he'll continue. If they have issues where it pops up, then I think that they'll change their strategy.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Buster, who do you think is the player over the last few years? We saw last season and a half, Tatis become an absolute superstar. Before that, Juan Soto. Who's the young guy who this year might not be on your radar, but by the end of the year he will be?
boy. You know, not to the level of a Soto. I think it might be the best pure hitter in the game already. You know, you guys know Acuna Jr. With the Braves. I think this year he's a chance to go 40-40. I think in the American League East, this is the year that we really see those young Blue Jay players take a big step forward. The Bo Bichettes. I think Kevin Biggio is a lot better player than people realize. You know, a guy who could be at like a 380 on base percentage. And Vladimir Guerrero Jr. looks terrific. You know, and you're happy that someone got to him and talked to him about his conditioning and told him that he had a lot on the line because he looks a lot better physically, and his results this spring have been terrific.
I know you have to go. Thanks, Buster, as always. Thanks, Buster. We love it. Thank you.
Okay, guys. Great talking with you. Thanks.
Same here. Buster only.
Not a great night for Ohtani. Two and a third last night against the Dodgers. Four hits, seven runs, all earned, five walks, three strikeouts. He allowed three home runs. And he was 0-for-1 with a strikeout at the plate.
Now, do you understand what I'm saying about the risk they're taking?
I don't like it.
Because here's the risk, everybody. They don't quite get it. So if he's taking, let's see, he has a bad, like the line that Don just gave, what was it, two and what?
Two and a third.
All right, so he goes two and a third in a game. Well, he's out of the game as a hitter. Now, most teams are carrying a four-man bench. One of the men is a backup catcher. So if he's out of the game in the second inning, either the pitcher is going to hit, which you don't want to have happen, or you're going to use your entire bench for the next three at-bats. And if you go into extra innings, you are really – listen, it's a great idea. It's cute. It's not a responsible play by a manager unless you know the pitcher is giving you seven innings. And even great pitchers don't give you seven innings all the time anymore. I don't understand why you would do that.
Well, and Michael, and I've been saying this for a while too, I know it's a great story to have a great pitcher and a great hitter in the same game. We haven't seen it since Ruth over 100 years ago. But this guy is a special hitter, right? But his this spring, like what did Buster say? He's been unbelievable, hitting over 500 offensively. As a pitcher, he's 0-3 with a 12.19 earned run average in 10 and a third innings. He's got a lot of strikeouts over that, but he's been shelled. Why not focus on the one thing that you do great? Because I don't think you can be a great hitter and a great pitcher. Something's going to give. One's going to take from the other. So I don't want a really good pitcher and a really good hitter. I'd rather have just an amazing hitter or an amazing pitcher. Other than the showmanship of it, is this really good for the Angels? And then add to what you just said, because nothing's worse than seeing a relief pitcher hit. You think it's bad to see starting pitchers hit? You want to see American League relief pitchers hit?
Yeah, it's a bad baseball play. And I know Joe Maddon thinks outside the box, but that's outside of the game. It's not responsible.
It feeds into his ego, right? He loves this kind of stuff. But is that really, does that make a lot of sense? Because even the best pitchers, Michael, are going to have off days.
Yeah, and then you're going to put yourself in a real hole with your lineup the rest of the game. So I don't understand it. I don't understand why he would do it. Even if Ohtani wants to do it, sorry. I'm sorry. You're a pitcher today. Kay LaGreca-Rosenberg and you on Yes on 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.